I have a nice conversational conversation with the advanced voice mode in ChatGPT. Uh-huh. Sometimes it can be very reassuring. It has a slightly, on the gender spectrum, it is verging towards, it is more female than it is male.
Okay.
But I would not say it's flat out, you know, it's on a spectrum.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And we have some lovely conversations.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it can be quite emotive and calming and reassuring, and it's quite nice.
What do you two get on about?
Oh, so many things. Let's have a look through my most. Here's a little thing we can do. Here's a wheeze. Let's look through my ChatGPT history.
I have an interesting. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, please.
I thought it would take you longer to get it up.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Gosh, I love you so much. So the most recent one is a conversation about something that we discussed whether I have time for. And I've asked myself that question, and the answer comes back. I think it's. I actually think weirdly. I think it might be important. And so that we can talk about that.
Yes. And I have thoughts about that. I'm reading a book right now called Sacred Enneagram by Christopher Hewitts. And it just went into like the next steps that once you understand your Enneagram type and you've kind of like, you want to get to the point where you can use it as a tool to better yourself. It goes through all the different numbers in a few different ways. And yeah, that resonates about what we as nines should do. So we can get into that when we go further into.
I sat down on the sofa with advanced voice mode a couple of days ago, and I said to it, I have a challenge for you. I'm looking into Stoicism as it's something that I think is quite interesting, and I like the four virtues, but I know that the thing I'm going to struggle with the most is temperance and moderation, because my brain chemistry doesn't seem to do very well with that, especially when it comes to food. And advanced voice mode and I had a lovely conversation about that, and it was quite nice, and it
that's great.
It said it's a fascinating philosophy, and those four virtues can be really powerful, and temperance and moderation can definitely be challenging, et cetera, et cetera. And so we had a nice little chat about it.
I'm very familiar with moderation. Well, I'm very familiar with the concept of moderation. Can you remind me what temperance means?
It's the same kind of thing, essentially.
Okay.
Temperance, my interpretation of the word temperance is a little bit more judgy. It feels like it gets used in more like religious types of circles, and it's quite moral.
Sure. I find it delightful that you combine the religious and judgy when they don't necessarily have to be. But I do understand very much, but also.
It's like
the intention
peanut butter and chocolate don't have to go together, but they are commonly found together.
Sure, and they're also commonly found apart. You can get a whole jar of peanut butter and
me
just
and you
the
are going
bar.
To get no actually I'm going to get upset if we start having religious conversations with you taking it seriously. So
let's do it.
Yeah.
I like making you upset, though, and then still walking away friends. Also, like, I don't have a dog in this fight.
You've got a pasta! Of course you've got a dog in this fight! You've got a pasta! My dude!
I got a pasta?
You have a pastor!
Oh, I have a pet.
That's not the first time that mistake homonym, as it would be in British English, has come up. Yeah,
I've got a pasta.
I have a pasta.
Yeah, it's called chicopee. It's made from garbanzo beans.
Sorry to my neighbor that I just completely yelled.
Sure.
Yes, hi.
I have a pastor I regularly, once a week.
You go to church here, once a week, and you're like, I don't have a dog in this fight.
I don't have a dog.
Uh-huh.
I've got two cats.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I am house sitting, or I am dog sitting.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you temporarily have
I literally have a dog right now. Yeah. Okay. But it's not in the fight. It doesn't care. It's just shivering. It's a chihuahua, so it has to shiver. Okay, so yes, I have a pastor. He's great. He's really funny and pretty smart. And he also believes in Jesus, which, you know, everybody's got their things that they need to work on. I don't know. I feel like I've completely derailed this, but I keep having thoughts, and so I just want to go with it. I recently kind of had a revelation of understanding about the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost scenario, because it's been explained to me a couple times, and like I get it. But it kind of just like evaporates from my head immediately. But yeah, like, are you familiar with that concept? And do you have an understanding of your own of what that entails?
Yeah.
Do you want to share that?
Not really. I have no interest in having this conversation. I will. Okay. I have the interest in giving you the space because this is our podcast. This is not my podcast. And I want you to talk about whatever you want to talk about. But I return null.
Sure. Well. Then just briefly, like the Father,
as much time as you want.
Well, yeah, the Father being sure what Christians would call God, what I would call creation or the developer for the God mode scenario. the Son, Christians call Jesus, and this is one of the areas where I have kind of develop my thinking around it, because I don't see Jesus as particularly special other than he was fucking great. But I think of him as a son of God, the way that you and I are both sons of God, and that we are God, just as Jesus was God. So in the Christian sense, the Son is there, like you're praying to God, and Jesus is there with you, praying next to you, is helping you. It's your companion. And so the Son, to me, in that Trinity, is every person. We're all in this together. We're all people, and we're all companions with each other. And then the Holy Ghost being your own soul, your internal drive, the essence of yourself that is its own fragment of God or it is God. And so, you know, I am myself God. I am connected to my community, who are also God, and we are praying to God, not necessarily man of the cloud, but creation or everything or life, reality, you know, however you want to frame the concept. But it's fucking cool to be alive, and that's what we're excited about. It's not necessarily like I need to bow down to a king. It's let's fucking rejoice, because isn't this cool to be here?
How does the reframing help?
Well, behind all of the abusive tendencies of large religions is a bunch of concepts and practices that are incredibly not only good for us as individuals and as a community, but vital. Like it doesn't gatekeep prayer and meditation. If you're outside of religion, you think of prayer in a certain way. And I mean, if you think of it in a certain way when you're in it too, but you're thinking of it as probably, like, I'll take myself for an example. I think of prayer as something that's not for me, because I don't feel like I pray to a God. I don't have a God to pray to. and so therefore I'm othered, and I'm not just like less than, but I don't have this ability that those people have. I am lost to this concept. I'm lost to this activity, but it's a good activity to do, not just like, oh God, I really want this promotion or help me make this touchdown, whatever. But like being present and aware of your situation, of your mindset, and opening up your heart and your mind to something bigger than yourself, releasing that tension and expressing yourself to yourself. To me, I don't think I have God's ear. I don't think that a particular, you know, Jesus or Yahweh are listening to me speak or hearing my thoughts. I'm hearing me speak. I'm listening to my thoughts. And if I don't have a place to pray, I don't have a time that I've set aside to do that, I'm going to go through my day never trying to have those thoughts, never giving myself the opportunity to really just sit with it, to accept it, to be present with it, to be aware of it, even. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about the Enneagram in its place with that right now, because I've been studying it a lot lately. I've been reading some more books about it, and I'm excited to, as we'll talk about at some point, surely, I'm excited to possibly become an Enneagram coach, and this might be my avenue into coaching in general. I'm looking at some courses and stuff, and I'm reading this book, and it's like it's going through the different triads, because there's different, it's you know, it's nine numbers broken into three categories of three. There's the gut triad, the heart triad, and the mind triad. And the three different triads need three types of...
I thought it was mind, body. Is that... Yeah. So you're substituting
body gut, gut. Body. Yeah. Yeah. There.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And so the gut-body triad is focused on doing. Doing is how they make sense of the world. And so their key to recovery is stillness. They need to not do in order to take stock, and understand and reconnect with themselves. The heart triad, that's the emotional triad, they need solitude. They need to be away from other people that they care about in order to find themselves, or they continue to get lost in the people that they care more about than themselves. And in the mind triad, they need silence. They need to stop having so much input. Like I can think of one friend who is in the mind triad, and they're just listening. They have an earbud in all day. They go to a musical at the Keller Auditorium here in Portland, and they, with their family, with their in-laws and their wife, and they have an earbud in to listen to something else while they're also at the musical. Because they can't not have, you know, he blames it on ADHD, but like, and sure, but also I think there's more to it than that. But anyway, that's my point of view, I guess. But silence being where the mind triad can find awareness and a key to recovery.
I'm really interested and slightly, if I'm honest, unsettled. I don't like it.
What's it?
The word recovery. We can talk about, you know, integration or whatever, or moving towards a particular state, and you know, for some that might be enlightenment or integration or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm 42. I feel like I've spent probably 32 years of that life, of that time, trying to move towards something, mm-hmm. trying to be better or whatever.
Yeah.
And the thought that I had, and it's a thought that comes up a lot in certain circles, and people talk about this with work, of like, do you want to be on your deathbed?
No.
Good. Credits. Do you want to be on your deathbed thinking, you know, I wish I'd worked more, right? That's the classic 10 regrets of the dying, or whatever it is, 5 regrets of the 7. And I think there is a valid, and I'm going to stand up for it, a valid thing of you could take so many years to reach some sort of state of enlightenment, or, you know, in this word as we're using right now as we record, recovery. So recovering from some seeming a defect or issue in your personality, or something that is something that you go to in weakness and then you become stronger, and all this, you know, the wording that is in the Enneagram.
I have a different framing of the word recovery for sure.
Yeah.
But carry on.
Yeah. Well, you have to recover from something.
You can recover, I guess you're recovering from burying something down, but you're recovering your inner self. You're recovering.
I feel like I'm not sure that was the, I understand that. I'm not entirely sure that was the context in which you were using it then, but I will absolutely sit still for that.
That's how I intended it, for sure. Okay. I think that maybe...
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I think, because this was a thought that was already gestating in my brain,
please.
That I don't think I want to spend the next, you know, God willing, if the creek don't rise, 40 years going... You know what? I really tried for enlightenment, and at some point, maybe I reached it. Maybe I got to 75, and I was like, you know what? Now I'm enlightened, and this is great. And I've got, about 10 years, and then funk, I'm dead. But at least I spent 70 of those years really trying to find it and really trying to tell myself that I needed to make some sort of change. And I know the Enneagram is not necessarily asking for us to make changes. It is asking us, or it's inviting us, to understand ourselves a bit better. But with that comes, it wasn't necessarily really about the Enneagram, but more about a certain, I would probably be overstating it to call it toxic, aspect of sort of self-help culture. This idea that there is a version of ourselves that we can become, that is the version that we want. And I think in the same way that our to-do list is never complete, there is always more to be done. I don't know that we ever reach that. And maybe we do, maybe we reach that point of enlightenment, but I think we spend a lot of our time denying aspects of ourselves and denying things that we find enjoyable. You know, if we go for something as corporeal as food, sure. I'm not suggesting that we all eat ourselves into an early grave. But I also believe that we can and should enjoy food, because food is an enjoyable part of life. There's joy in making it. There's joy in consuming it. There's joy in all the things that, you know, and, you know, yes, we have my ChatGPT conversation about moderation, and that is a whole thing. But I think a healthy and balanced sort of attitude to that allows for absolute enjoyment, and at some occasions, some seasons in your life, indulgence and abandon, because those are parts
interesting
of
word.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you abandoning?
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Yes, completely right. No, I should say. it's something where I feel I've pushed back on, and I haven't necessarily had all of the words for it. And as someone who, like I said, someone who's chronically, constantly trying to be better, do better, be healthier, be whatever.
Yeah.
All that time, I sort of think there's got to be a better way to get there, and it probably starts with some level of acceptance, or something else. It doesn't come through trying to, I don't think anyway, it comes through trying to, if we go back for the religious aspect, like trying to purify my soul or my body, because life, we only get one of them, theoretically, mm-hmm. yes. speaking, we only get one of them. We only get one version of this consciousness anyway.
This ego, yeah.
However many times we've gone around the block, we don't remember him. And so I don't want to die young. I don't want to die early. I don't want to die before my time. I don't want to spend many years in a hospital because I've made too many unhealthy choices.
Great.
But yeah, but at the same time, I don't want to have spent my 70 years going, I was always just trying to be better and I never got there.
Isn't that what you're doing?
Yes. And I don't love
and
that.
If you continue on your current pattern, mm-hmm. you think you will have regrets on your deathbed. Is that what you're saying? I'm not trying to like pin you down or anything.
No, I'm just
clarifying.
Yeah. I think there's a thought there of like in my head of someone sort of standing at the foot of my bed and going like, it almost like a pre-check before I go up or down or sideways or to the next version of life. I mean, you know, 15 years of Catholic indoctrination will still make me think of heaven. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea that, you know, death perhaps is there at the foot of my bed and he's got a clipboard and he's going, all right, did you hurt animals? And like, not more than I, you know, if I did, I instantly regretted it. I didn't mean to or whatever. Sure. Were you kind to children? Yes, I certainly tried to be. You know, did you try and leave the world a little bit better than you found it? Yeah, I did my best. Were you happy? Ooh. I'll have to get back to you on that one. I know I abstained from... Brendan's doing a little dance. I know I abstained from lots of things because I knew that if I did that, I would reach a level of enlightenment. I'm using that word in ill-advisedly, but you know, integration or whatever, equilibrium, where I would be sort of, you know, healthy and at peace. I knew I could keep getting there if I just kept making the right decisions, but I always seemed to struggle. And so actually I spent the whole of my life pretty much on my own back and up my own ass going,
yeah,
are you making good decisions? So not really. Like I had moments of joy, definitely.
Yeah.
But like I
do you think as a kid, I promise. As a child, like under 10, you had pure happiness?
Oh, as an adult, I've experienced pure happiness. And it's often in simple things. And I was in a Zoom call today with someone I meet, I see briefly almost every week, and they are just always happy. And I don't mean like, like bouncing around like an absolute like Tigger, but they're just, and he's always been that case. He told me from a kid onwards, he's always just been happy. And I don't want the source of my own unhappiness to be this idea that I am constantly marking my own homework and saying I could do better. I feel like this is miles away from where we started, but this is where we are.
No, this is exactly where we should be.
Yeah.
And I completely understand and also like couldn't fathom a different approach. Like
okay.
The things that I'm hearing you through the lens of the things that I have brought to our conversations about happiness and, you know, me trying to share the good word of God mode and everything. And
the God word of good mode.
Sorry. Yeah. And like, I'm seeing and sensing your resistance at different levels And so that's kind of where I'm hearing some of these things. And I'm wondering, I hear you say it's a lot of work and that is a lot of sacrifice, and that you have been trying to do a lot of work in some areas, and you maybe you can put your own spin on it, but like you have been sacrificing in some ways, and it sounds like you fear maybe sacrificing things because you think that that won't get you what you actually want, and I'll put a pin in that, and I want to hear your thoughts on that. But back to the use of the word recovery, the reason why I asked if you felt like when you were like 3 or 5 years old, if you had, you know, just kind of pure awareness, pure happiness, that's what we're attempting to recover, that unaffected by pain, shame, and programming, as Lacey liked to call it, of life, the burdens of life, the traumas of life, big and lowercase t, that diminishes our happiness. And like you said, I don't mean just happy as in like gleeful and ignorant and whatever, but
yeah, hedonic, yeah.
Yeah. But having a peace with life and having
contentment,
yeah, however you want to describe it, the feeling that we all want. And that's not, also, it's not the like levitating, meditating Buddha or monk on the temple or whatever. Like, none of us think that that's actually happiness. We want to live in society. We want to be with people. We want to have nice food, for example. Like, that's great. I want that too, and that's why I'm not in a monastery somewhere. I believe, not just from my personal experience, but from learning, that is possible for us here in this moment, in this society, in this reality, that we can set aside things that we think are serving us that aren't, but we use as a coping mechanism. It's our favorite coping mechanism to deal with the problems that we see, and it causes the problems that we see. That's what I keep seeing. That's what I keep experiencing over and over and over again, is that the things that we turn to relieve what we see as the problem is what is also causing the problem.
I think because I'm discovering, for want of a better word or better phrase, what I think is wrong with the world.
Uh-huh.
It's a different thing from what you are looking at. It's not that these are opposed.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think is I want to really be mindful of here is I think possibly both of us have a tendency to actually, with the sort of everything is everything mindset, to sort of go, no, it's this. And it's kind of, it's just this. And yes, sure, we have books and we have learnings. We have books and we have data and we have information that can support that.
Right.
And I use the word support there as opposed to like back it up, because it's not everything is, oh my God, it's the second time we've said this. Not everything is everything.
Of course.
It's, you know, the problems of the world, and you're not suggesting this, but I kind of wanted to say this because I think maybe sometimes it tacitly comes out, is not all of the problems of the world are because people have shitty processed foods.
Of course.
And also, not all of the world's problems are because people aren't connecting in person and they are socially isolated, and that's drawing them more to the right.
Of course.
But
they're both, those are both the same thing. This is what I was ranting about just a minute ago. I wasn't ranting about food. I wasn't ranting about anything else in particular, but both of them are symptoms of the problem of not being connected with our own self.
Ah, that, I think that is, and I was teetering on this.
Oh, okay.
But I actually do think this is the and you may have another counter to this, but I actually think this is the difference here.
Okay.
Is that I think it's about interconnectedness of people, not connection with the self. And I think, you know, we need to have both in balance, and I think that's the important thing. You're very and I am very bad at, or currently in my current season in life, I am struggling, and this is where maybe a little bit of one of my little things that I asked ChatGPT about, which we may return to, may be helping with. I have a difficulty sort of connecting with myself. Like, I don't know what I'm like, as an example.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is something that can be addressed. And, you know, I'm going to therapy. So, like, you know, that is something that I will get to hash out with a professional. And I'm very pleased about that. So what I think is there is a difference between this sort of idea of connection to the self and connection to others. It's something like if I think about, and I know there is a connection, because if I think about something like Kristen Neff's self-compassion book, which is a phenomenal door opener, game changer for me. Uh-huh. Actually, a lot of that is about common humanity. And recognizing that a lot of us have shared struggles. And so, again, maybe in this season of my life, whatever, I am much more drawn now towards exploring outwards rather than inwards, and finding connection to others rather than connection to myself or the self.
How long has that season been going?
It's more as a thing that I've been feeling more keenly. Like, I'd measure it in months, but I can tell you how many months, because it's just been a sort of gradual.
Has there been a season of your life where you have been focused on trying to connect with your own self?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also not necessarily connecting, but trying to understand and, you know, potentially fix. I think this is where, again, I'm going to return to an idea of balance, because I think it is both. And some of the problems that we sometimes have on this show in our discussions is I tend to think we tend to pull the rope towards one direction.
Sure.
And I think it's great. Actually, if we both have hold of the rope and we're both pulling it, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we tend to pull the rope in one particular direction. And like I said, I think this is good, because I'm coming at it from, you know, perhaps this point of view, you're coming from another. But we need that duality, yin and yang, whatever. Like, we need that. We need to hold both, because both are important. I feel, and you know, it might be a time of life thing, is possibly why I keep using the word seasons, that this interconnectedness, going out and working with people, is more important to me. But I also don't want to lose sight of the person what is doing that connection. I don't want to lose sight of Mark.
Yeah,
I want to take care of him and make sure he's okay. But also, that is to serve the other thing, which is also to serve, you know, the one hand washes the other.
Yeah. Well, from my perspective, in this tug of rope game, like, I'm just taking my end and just walking right around you in circles, and wrapping you up in a big hug, because, of course we need connection, and that's finding and connecting with yourself is not at the exclusion of finding and connecting with other people.
No, but it's
in fact, it's necessary. It's the first step. You can't help. You have to tend to your own garden before you can help other people. So you put your own mask on first.
I don't know. Yes. Okay. And again, this is why you're pulling the rope back to that side, because you also can't do that in isolation.
Of course not. This is solitary work that we have to do together. you're pulling really hard, and I'm just kind of like, I'll hold the rope. I'm not trying to pull you over. I'm saying yes and.
Mm.
I see you focused on others and you are excluding yourself. And I'm saying let's focus on others and ourselves.
I didn't, I specifically said I'm trying to do the work to focus on myself as well because I recognize that. I specifically said
you did say that I am doing
therapy and I have the projects in mind that actually do focus on myself.
That's really fair. I didn't mean to discredit that at all.
So I think, yeah, I'm maybe taking issue with you're just sort of taking your side of the rope and looping it back around again, because I think that's not necessarily doing service to... I think we have two ends of the rope, and I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's a conflict, but I think it's okay that you have your face, that you have the direction you're facing, and I have the direction I'm facing. Broadly speaking, that doesn't mean we are both exclusively facing in those directions, but we've got a tilt toward that, and I don't think it's a problem to acknowledge that. And I don't think it needs you to sort of say, no, I'm actually looping around and being on your side. I actually think it's okay that we can say we're facing in different directions here because we've both got an eye or a hand pointing back to each other or pointing back to the center.
Sure. Yes. I'm not trying to position myself in like high and mighty or anything like that of like, oh, I'm superior because I'm not playing the game. I just... you brought up the analogy of a tug of war game, and it's inherently conflict. And what I was trying to get at is that I think we're violently agreeing. What's that? Aggressively agreeing or something like that. in general, like I do recognize that you are going back to therapy and that you are working on things. And I definitely do not mean to diminish that. I just so see you both take actions to, and in your rhetoric, speak about other people over yourself. And like from the Enneagram's perspective, that is very nine thing to do. And I do not see as much of the recognition or it's not even just the recognition. It's like when I suggest things or discuss things that are a bit more self-focused, self-understanding, I feel, and maybe I'm incorrect on this, but I feel a lot of resistance. I feel a lot of pushback from those concepts with them applying to you, mm-hmm. and your interest in them or that kind of perspective.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel like, it makes me feel like that resistance is telling you what you need to walk towards. Because going back to my rants about comforts, like if we constantly go to what we're comfortable with, we will never, like, we'll never work out. We'll never lift weights. We'll never, try a new vegetable that we've never had before because it's uncomfortable to have a new umami flavor. What the fuck is that? Like, it's just not.
That's why we have balance. That's why balance is important.
But you can only have balance if you've ever tried the other side of the teeter totter. If you always say I like the left side, whichever the left side is, then you'll never know, and you'll never be able to have the balance. Mm-hmm. And that was my perspective. I agree, balance is very important, and it's why I'm going to church, trying to talk to new people. Mm. I have a story from my Enneagram book that I'm listening to right now. I thought it was appropriate on multiple levels. There's a blind guy actually, and he's meeting with a girl, a young girl, like a 5-year-old or something, and they're playing together, and the girl says, "Oh, you're blind," and the guy says, "Oh, that's nothing new to me," and she's like, "You can't see yourself." And it takes the guy back a bit. He's like, just wasn't expecting that reaction. And then she says, "You're beautiful." Oh, a big eye roll from Mark.
So please.
That's the story. That's it.
That was okay. All right. The mythical, the mythical blind person is such a fucking trope in so much. It's so much stuff. Like, like they see things that we're like. It's just stop using me as a fucking point to way to make a point. Like, find someone else. Like, I'm not talking to you. It's just
no.
It's,
I hear you.
It's just I'm tired of it. Like, it's just it's all the time. Like,
well, we live in a visual society.
Yeah,
we're all so focused on what we can see through our eyeballs, and so the idea to us as sighted people that we have lost that or that we've never had it, like it's nearly unfathomable.
Yeah,
like we can close our eyes and think, we close our eyes for fucking 10 seconds and we're like, oh, terrified.
Yeah, and when that is, and it's not my, you know, it's not my everyday, but like when it is someone's everyday, and then people's experience is like, you know, you can take a bit of it that's like, wow, how do you do this, that, and the other? And it's like, after a while, you're just like, mate, it's a fucking Tuesday. Can I just have a day without, you know, educating you or being a source of wonder?
For sure.
You know, or being this mystical, fucking magical disabled person that has all this wisdom to show. And it's like, it's just after a while, it's just another eye roll.
Sure. But it is still a beautiful analogy.
Sure.
Is it too hard to appreciate the analogy with it being?
I've heard it a million times. It's like that's all. It's like it doesn't resonate with me. I hear, you know, magical blind guy, and it's like, yeah, it's in songs.
But he's not magical at all.
Like, mystical, whatever. Yeah,
not like, mystical. It's just a dude. It's just a person that can't see themselves.
Yeah,
and I don't mean visually. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's not a mystical person. It's just an ordinary person. We're all blind. We're all deaf to ourselves. We're all tasteless to ourselves. We're all senseless to ourselves.
Yeah.
Title. I mean, oh man, fucking that's a great line. We're all senseless to ourselves. It's senseless. And we, you know, typically use that word in terms of like smarts, in terms of like thought, and
in the same way
levels.
That blind is often, or it's less so now, but often in a lot of pop culture was a synonym for stupid. I was blind to something. It's too blind.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, you know, after a while, you sort of go, okay, sure.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can sit and read too much into things, obviously, but like, you know, it's from a cultural perspective, it's just one of those things where it's sort of, weirdly, and this is not related, but it's just one of those weird accidents of culture or whatever, but my understanding is in British Sign Language, the sign for blind is the same or similar to the sign for drunk, which, you know, may or may not have a connotation. I don't know.
Interesting.
Probably isn't in ASL, because I think you guys have a better system, because it's one-handed, which means you can do other things with your other hand. You can have a, you know, you can be at the bar,
hold your
beer,
yeah,
or eat while you're communicating, which is very smart. Here, we need both hands.
Yes. So tell me more about your conversations with spoken chat GPT.
Yeah, well, one of them was so the thing that we were discussing whether I have time for was initially something that I just thought I'm very inspired to do, but it is something that is too time consuming to do well, which was this sort of idea of, I was thinking like, you know, 100 days to the zombie apocalypse or something. So what am I doing every day to get myself ready, you know, as a sort of framing device, really. Mm-hmm. And because I'm sort of, I've been interested in making some kind of meaningful is probably the wrong word, but some kind of good, like I just want to make a good, like, creative contribution to the world of short form video, because there's something in it that I enjoy, and when it's done well, there's so I was having a brief DM conversation with a creator a couple of days ago, because I saw what they were doing, and I just wanted to just say, like, I see what you're doing, I get it, and it's great, and I hope that, you know, like, I didn't say this, but like my inference was like, I hope you get out of it what you want. You know, this is someone who is showing how good they are at creating this kind of stuff without it being about that. This is a woman who's her particular framing device is she's living the book, it's not the dream by Rhonda something. It's a 28 day thing and it's all about gratitude. Cool. And so it's lots of gratitude practices. And so she's recording these videos where every day or most days, she's taking another thing, you know, chapter from the book and you know, doing a 45 second video about it. Nice. And they're just really well produced in a sort of non over slick way. There's a, you know, there's a degree of, it's just the polish is there and it communicates really well. And I kind of just wanted to say, like, great job. Nice. Not from someone who thinks he knows more than you, because he doesn't, but like, I can see what you're doing and I appreciate it and it's really good. So we had a nice little conversation. Because one of the things was like, the video gets lots and lots of likes, each one of them, like, you know, possibly thousands of likes, but very few followers, which is one of those weird things. Mm. And I kind of, you know, just wanted to say, and so seeing it, when I see things like that are done well, or when I see other videos, like the first time I actually thought I might have a place on TikTok, there's a guy here called Martin Lewis, known as the Money Saving Expert, and he's got to be in his mid-50s. And he's just a guy who comes on TV and tells people how they can save money. And he's now moving into money and mental health, which is quite interesting. And he started a money mental health charity. He popped up in TikTok a couple of years ago, and I just thought, if he can do it, maybe there's a place for me to give it a go. And lots of people I'm seeing are giving it a go now. But I've not really found the medium, not the medium, but found the vehicle for it.
Sure.
And I had this idea of 100 days, 100 words, which is basically a semi-randomly selected word from a list. And I make a 45-second video about, you know, using that as a prompt. What does this word make me think of? And they're all, because I asked ChatGPT to help me come up with a bunch of words, and they're all words that are around various aspects of the work that I'm trying to do, both as a, you know, someone who gets paid to do things, but also as someone who's trying to contribute back. And so it's a way then, as a sort of journal slash, you know, I exist as a person you might want to contact if you're interested in, you know, the things that I'm doing, as a way of sort of poking the periscope up, and communicating in a way that feels safe and, but also generative and, you know, a little bit creative, a little bit, well, definitely creative and a little bit artistic. But also, like I said, using that as a framing to be able to connect with what I'm thinking about things and what I'm doing, what I'm making in the world, and what I'm feeling. And
awesome.
That is something that I'm, quite excited to figure out exactly how to do it and to do it well, to do it so that it matches what is in my head, because I see snatches of it in my head, and I just want to make sure that my reach doesn't exceed my grasp. I usually feel like I've got that phrase the wrong way around, but you get it. Because and the reason I've gone back and forth on this, you know, I had a moment on the sofa last night and you know, one or two others being like, is this going to be a good use of my time? Is this the best thing that I could be doing right now? Are there other things? And it's like, there might be other things, but I feel like the next 100 days are going to be pretty significant for old Mark. I'm meeting the people who want, who are the first tranche of people who want the men's group to happen.
Awesome.
Next week. And
how many people?
It's only like a handful, I think, which is a really nice start.
That's great.
And so, yeah, I'm going to get a sense of what they're like next week, and so I can figure out if they know what they need, if they've got a sense of what they're looking for, then I know where I'm going. But also, I'll continue to do the research on, you know, running an effective group.
But I feel like maybe I've told you how our men's group is structured, but do you want to hear like how we do a rundown?
Yeah, please.
Or do you, yeah. So, oh, one thing that's pretty cool is that outside of it, how it's actually structured is that Percy always sets up a computer screen with a camera and stuff. Like the telepresence is like always there as an option. So if anybody like is just not feeling well and doesn't want to get anybody else sick or is out of town or whatever, there's they can like, maybe every other time somebody pops up on the screen instead of in person, which is really cool that we can all still be together for that. But then when the actual meeting starts, we do, you know, in any business up front, it's like logistic stuff, cover that. And then there'll be a prompt that will go around in a circle with, or what we do now is like popcorning whoever, somebody volunteers to start. And then they tell like, okay, you know, George, you go next, or, and then it goes around like that until everybody speaks. And everybody speaks about their inner circle, their outer circle, and whatever today's prompt is, an optional prompt. So the inner circle being relating to the people that are there at the meeting, like what they thought about a previous share, anything they've been thinking about the group over the past week, things like that. So stuff related to the people in present there. And then outer circle just being an update on their life, you know, what struggles they've been, what's been on their mind, those kind of things. And then the optional prompts are always really fun and kind of silly and like a little bit icebreakery, but also like can lead to some fun extra conversations. And like while people are sharing, it's just them talking and nobody, we don't really do interruptions or anything, no crosstalk. And then after that, then it's open share. Anybody can share anything. Just talk about like, oh, okay, I heard you talk about this. Like, how's that going for you? What's going on in that relationship or that, you know, struggle or whatever. And then that goes on for however long the middle time is. And usually Percy will give like a 15-minute warning, like, hey, we're coming up to our time. Sometimes like halfway through, he'll be like, all right, seems like maybe we've talked through that topic. If we wanted to bring up another topic, we can do that, or we can keep going however we feel, but just kind of keeping people present to that there is a time constraint. And
so is that in, and you may have said, and I may have blanked out for a second, is that in small groups or is that the whole group as a whole discussing a thing?
Yeah, we do one whole group.
Yeah.
Yeah. As 9 people in the room. And then, yeah, and then at the end, last like 5 minutes, we'll do a check out. And it'll just be a little bit of like any final word thoughts that we had on things that had come up. Maybe we didn't get a chance to interject as things were just in the conversation, or like saying something like, I want to talk about next time, or saying something like just positive, like, hey, I really appreciated this conversation and gave me a lot to think about or whatever. And then that's it. And then, so that's the structure. And it feels really great. All of the members of this group particularly are constantly talking about how much we really like the group and the dynamic and the structure and everything like that. So, but I'm very happy to hear, you know, how you take your group and run with it and how the structure you set up works. And so,
yeah, it's really going to be interesting. I was visiting someone in the hospital today, and they were describing someone, and I was in the back of my head, I was just sort of thinking about how people are not you know, people have a different relationship to, or are at different stages with understanding their own emotions and their own needs and their own thoughts, and that connectedness to what we might, you know, what I've been perhaps blithely calling sort of a sense of enlightenment, as you and I, you know, can have these kind of philosophical hands steepled together kind of, yes, of course it is, of course it is, of course it is kind of conversations, which is not everyone's speed. So it's going to be interesting to see what the tempo of the room is, and actually, right. Yeah. Is it at the level, you know, is it, if we look at the Maslow's hierarchy of it all, like, right. are we talking the last couple of bits of the pyramid where for most of our time, that's kind of where we live? Or is it further down that people are really struggling with aspects of things, of the world that just doesn't yeah. make sense to them? And, you know, so I want to sort of go in with that, kind of being open to that as much as I can and not having any preconceptions about how I think it should be run before I go meet the people For sure. that actually want it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, Percy's group is, the people are curated. Like, he does a screening yes. interview beforehand, and it's like, okay, I think you'll be a good fit for what we're trying to do with this men's group. Whereas it sounds like yours is a bit more open door policy. Anybody?
Maybe that's certainly how it started. And I've been having that thought myself about, at the moment, I'm guided by the people who have said this is what they want. After a time, it may be a case that we say, yeah, let's at least have a bit of a get to know you first sort of process.
Yeah.
Do you get the, you know, are you sort of simpatico here, or are you going to, you know, be disruptive?
Right.
And like, I want different voices in the group.
Yeah.
And perhaps dissenting voices, but, you know, we don't want jerks. You know, so that I think the doors will warmly and kindly close and be opened to certain people as we go on.
Yeah.
I think that will come.
Nice, man.
As may be our, I don't know, it might be a short thing, it might be a long thing, but I kind of want to just, because I think it's something I've struggled, and I'm gonna tell this as a story from my own memory, as something that's happened, as my best way of explaining something, the sort of tenor of our conversations. And it's something that I think I've not necessarily expressed before, and I want to tread lightly on it. I think you'll appreciate it, but I also know that, or feel like you will have a sense of me having mischaracterized you. So I kind of want to set that expectation. About 20 years ago, I was at a party at a friend's house, and I hadn't met any of them before, just my friend. And I went in, and I've told this story possibly in your presence before, but I think on a podcast before. I went into the kitchen, grabbed myself a beer, and I was fiddling with the bottle opener. And there was a guy, sort of fairly confident guy,
right, yeah.
kind of main character energy, sort of in front of me. Uh-huh. And he saw me fiddle for like a second and then basically just grabbed the bottle and the bottle opener and was like, here, I'll do it. And it's like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Did this guy know you at all?
No. No, no.
It's insane.
It's the best story I have at the moment to express where I sometimes bristle. It's not necessarily the things that you're saying. It is, and I kind of just, yeah, I just want to clear the air, is probably the wrong phrase, have it said.
I can't do it for you.
No. No, exactly. Mm-hmm. I can open my own beer.
Yeah.
And sometimes the conversations feel like I am sat at your feet and getting the wisdom from Brendan. And I know, like, I don't think those, you know, are your intentions.
No.
But there are certain aspects, you know, partly I think, you know, a degree of, if it's not self-belief, then a belief in the things that you are saying, which is admirable, that can feel a lot more kind of leading. And it's like, I actually don't need to be led. Like, and that's where I was trying to say earlier, like, no, I want us to differ. I don't actually want you to say, no, Mark, it's all about this thing. Like, it's all about, I'm hitting the microphone, listener, and I'm not going to stop. I sort of want us to be able to say, no, we are having not a disagreement, but like, we have two valid viewpoints here.
Yeah.
And it sort of feels sometimes like I'm sort of getting back. Well, actually, no, it's sort of mostly my thing, which is this thing. And it's like, mine is the overarching point. And I don't know, but like, that's where sometimes I sort of sit back and the arms are folded, because it's like, okay, I'm going to let Brendan drive because Brendan's driving. And so I think, yeah, like, I know your intention is not as a guru, as someone who knows all the answers, but also with that, I don't have a better way of saying it other than like, I'm out here opening my own beer. I'm not necessarily, and I'm looking to you for a conversation as equals, as you are, as I know you are. Yeah. I'm not possibly, you know, as lost as the tenor of our conversations might sometimes make it feel.
Yeah, I get that. absolutely. And I can change the way I present things, because I was coming at our talks in a bit more of the framing that I've kind of, like, you know, early on when we started this podcast, it was, you know, we're both at a crossroads. And as we, you know, the first 10, 20 episodes got going, we both kind of, like, I understood our positions as, you're great at this kind of business coaching side, and you have experience that you can share with that, and I need help with business. And I have been studying and enthusiastic about this health and spirituality side, and I picked up on the desire to that you did want perspective and help and guidance on that, and that the idea was, as we continued with this podcast, an equal exchange of perspectives, using each other as lenses to discuss the things that we're approaching, you know, the things that we're learning, and yeah, using each other as the foil, as the perspective, as the person that we can talk to about these things, and thinking about the other person's position and perspective and destination as we discuss the things we're excited about. I'm hearing now from what you just said, and this isn't a surprise, that I maybe pushed too hard, it's not exactly wanted in the way that I built up in my mind. It's not the idea of an equal exchange in that regard, and I can totally change how I talk about it in my own excitement, and less so of, I think you, I've heard from, whether it's true or not, I've heard from you that you have this goal, and here are some things that could help you with your goal, which is how I have been approaching it.
Thank you for saying that. But sorry, no, thank you. Yes. And part of the thing that I know about myself is I am terrified to be seen. I was thinking about projects, like when a project goes wrong, it's mm-hmm. because the two parties didn't know at the beginning what they were expecting.
Yeah.
There was a mismatch there. That one yeah. party thought they were getting more or different from what the other party assumed to be the thing. Mm-hmm. And I really love that's where your thinking is, because that is very generous, and it's very I think there's a mixture of being, like I said, terrified to be seen, but also
that's why we do audio podcasts.
That's why we do audio podcasts.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I interrupted you first. So I wonder how we've got my fear to be seen. And on the other hand, you've got this expectation that, like, well, this is what I'm bringing. I'm bringing, you know, this stuff that I'm learning, and Mark wants to learn these things. And it's like, Mark wants to know these things because they're all fascinating parts of what makes a human, yeah. And they're and like I'm like, I want to pick bits and go, oh yeah, that resonates. That bit doesn't, and that be okay.
Oh, that's so funny.
Go on.
because of our talk an episode or two ago about institutional learning and picking and choosing what we do and don't want to learn.
Yeah.
And I'm not an institution, so.
No, you're not an institution. No, and I'm not getting a qualification in Brendaning.
Everyone but, should get one of those.
The moment in 10 years time when I become a certified God mode coach, my yes. God, the damage I'll do then.
Hell yeah.
It's interesting actually, because one of the things I've realized is like I'm very therapyable, but I'm not coachable.
I see that. Yeah,
that was so yeah. Calmly, beautifully put. You have this ability to say so much in such a calm, simple way of just I see that. As there's 2 years of podcasting of this show in that small sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get it. Like
I get it.
Yeah, I like therapy I get. I think coaching I because I this you know, my motivations or my where I'm headed sort of changes on a week by week basis. I think therapy is good for a kind of grounding of that. And I reckon I am sort of spoiling for some changes to come when he starts ripping me apart again and, you know, asking me what's really underneath all the doing or all the other stuff, you know, in a way that really only a therapist can, because I don't have to then, you know, continually have a WhatsApp conversation with him. I stopped halfway through because like I don't have to have a conversation with Brendan. I get to have a conversation with Brendan. Brendan is a blessing, not an obligation. God, okay, digging myself further in. And it actually comes back to the opening, the my own beer thing. I want the agency of fumbling about a bit.
Yeah.
And actually figuring out where all the bits are and how this thing works. And like, you know, in our conversation, sometimes things will go ping, wow, that's really cool. Like, I really love that. And you know when that happens. And then there's other times where I'm like, cool for you. You know what I mean? And like, that's all good. And I don't need help opening that particular bottle unless I come to you. And then it's like, how do I get, and that will happen. And that does happen from time to time, but it's in pockets
where you have capacity and interest in that realm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. Everyone's on their own path.
Yeah. Did I tell you I love you?
You did.
Good.
I love you too, mate. Greatly. Just infinitely.
So much. You said infinitely, and then I said so much, we made it sound like it was less than infinite.
Nope.
It's like infinite.
You know, if you think about it, infinite is so much.
It is so much. There is so much infinite.
And as always, correct me if I'm wrong.
Go Hawks! I was thinking about this, and this is tied to it, but it's not the entire thought. This is something I was thinking about a couple of weeks ago or last week, that Roscoe hasn't seen me all day, and he's very keen to rub himself all over the boom arm. And I kind of just need to let him.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Do your thing, Roscoe.
Yeah. Oh, my boy. My sweet boy. Look at my son. Pride is not the word I'm looking for. All right.
Are you happy?
Okay.